heard you say something else in terms of the blue bonnet. Is blue bonnet not the correct term of it, or what's the correct term?
Blue bonnet's just the common name. So in the plant world, we give all the plants a name that's easy for people to understand. But in the science side of plants, they all get a Latin name. It's all built off Latin. And Lupinus texensis is our Texas blue bonnet.
And say it one more time for the blue bonnet. I want to try say it.
Lupinus
Lupinus texensis. Wait.
texensis.
Texensis.
That's
Lupinus
it. Perfect.
texensis. There you go. I know Latin now. No, just kidding. While the blue bonnet, also known as the Lupinus texensis, is the most famous Texas wildflower, there are over 5,000 species of wildflowers in the Lone Star State. Each spring, Texas flatlands explode into colorful fields with stunning views. And with each spring, Texans love to enjoy the view, whether it's taking photos in the fields, picking flowers to cherish, or even stopping by the side of the road just to appreciate the scenery. It has become a beloved aspect of Texan culture. I'm Bree Flores, and Texas wants to know, how did the blue bonnets and wildflowers in general become a part of Texas culture? I spoke with Dave Forehand, Vice President of Cultivation and Garden Engagement at the Dallas Arboretum, to learn more about plants. Biggest thing that we're learning about today is the Texas wildflower seasons. And can you just let us know what is the typical timeline for these to blossom?
Right. Well, Texas is enormous. It's got many diverse and interesting ecosystems. So throughout the state, there's basically something blooming all 12 months out of the year. So if you really want to find a wildflower blooming, you can do it even in December or January. You might go towards the areas of South Texas to find those things, but they're there. The big time that people are most familiar with is springtime with the iconic blue bonnet. Lupinus texensis. And that's what people think of more than any others, but there's a lot of others that are complementary and bloom as well. So spring is that first time. And again, it's the blue bonnets. They're naturalized across the state. They've also been well planted by people, so that's helped them spread. So you can find them almost anywhere, maybe except in far west Texas where it's so dry. I mean, you're getting to the desert climates there. And a little less in East Texas is so forested and more shaded and things, but pretty much anywhere. The other flowers that bloom around that time are the paintbrush. Indian paintbrush is what it's called, and also Texas paintbrush. It's a subspecies of it that's native that does well as there is in that time frame. So those are the big ones in spring. There's primrose. It's a pink thing that blooms around that time of the blue bonnets that people see in fields. And after spring, you kind of work your way into summer. And summer, you'll see early summer, Engelmann daisy. That's a big one, native. It's gorgeous, yellow flowers. And they pop up everywhere, especially on the roadsides. Sunflowers, there's not a native species of sunflower that bloom. You'll see those. And especially if someone has disturbed the soil, like they're in the middle of trying to develop some property and they dig everything up. But then they don't do anything for a while. Those sunflower seeds get stirred up and exposed, and the whole area can turn into a giant sunflower field just like that. It's so fun to see that happen sometimes. The other one that I like that's in summer is Coreopsis. It's nice, really bright yellow petals, and those are along edges of roads and undisturbed fields as well. So we're like, and probably my favorite summer one, it's called a wine cup. And it's a little but kind of purplish, fuchsia colored one. It kind of looks like a little cup, the petals, the way the flowers are held. And that one's really pretty. Again, it's a native plant throughout most of the central part of North Texas. And then in fall, we roll right into goldenrods. And again, certain types of sunflower, there's a different variety, the Maximiliana sunflower bloom then. There's a th plant called the Mexican hat. It's got this really beautiful kind of yellow petal with this big kind of bronzy colored centerpiece that I guess always gets the name Mexican hat because it looks like a sombrero, kind of the way the flower blooms. And then there's purple blooming fall asters that are great. They bloom throughout the state. So that kind of rounds us through the year. All these things kind of overlap depending on the time, the climate, the weather. So there's always something to see as you can move through. And because I think it's such an acknowledgement of that. And a lot of this started with Lady Bird Johnson and her initiative in like the beauty of Texas. She's originally native of Alabama, so she moved to Texas, but loves the place. She loved flowers when she was still growing up in Alabama, and when moved to Texas, of course, met her husband and future president. She really adopted this state and became well known for like advocating for the beauty of natural things and wildflowers in particular, and that became a national initiative initially, and it still is, and kind of changed how people think about the natural spaces, especially along roadsides. There's just timing's everything. So, I guess historically it was just like keep it mowed, keep it cut, keep it short. But there's timing. If you cut it at the wrong time, you're just chopping down all the future wildflowers. So by having that ability to know when and how, they've really been able to ma manage our state roadsides so that we get all this beauty at the right times.
And you mentioned before, because one of my other questions is, how did the bluebonnet become an official state flower? Was it because of her initiative that it kind of started, or what's the origin with that?
That's a good question. I don't know exactly when it did. I'm a native of Alabama, just like her. Moved here, like as an adult, but it's just so iconic and beautiful. I guess at some point, I don't know if it was already the state flower earlier than that, but it is really unique. And what's kind of unique to me, being a plant person, is the lupin, which is a plant you normally find in more alpine areas and in colder climates. But we've got the Texas tough version that grows here. And so that's kind of fun in my mind. Because if you go out to like Colorado and you get up in the higher elevations in the summer, you'll see the lupins blooming. They're bluish color like ours, and also other colors as well. And in other parts of the world, you'll see different species of them blooming. Like in the parts of Europe, in the more mountainous areas of the Alps, you'll find them growing. So it's kind of interesting for me to see that the state flower is actually something I associate with cold places, because we get cold, but not that much. I'm more so being a hot place for the most part.
That is interesting. So I wonder if that's because it's a state flower, because it's not supposed to be in this type of weather.
Maybe so. I just think it's the iconic color of it too. There aren't many things that bloom blue or bluish, the bluish hue in the flower world. That's not as common as pink and white and yellow and some of the other things. So maybe that kind of endears it to people as well.
That's wonderful. I like that. And are there any factors that could kind of hinder the blossoming of these flowers?
Well, not really. We'll see as weather patterns change. We're getting drier, we're getting warmer. But one thing about all of these wildflowers is they're very adaptable and very tough. Like they're going to figure out how to bloom, and they're going to figure out how to make it no matter what the conditions. And that's why they've survived so long. That's why they're out in these natural areas. And so I think there's not much can go wrong. The biggest thing would be just mowing and getting rid of them, because they all self-seed, which means they bloom, the flowers form, they're pollinated, the seeds set on these wildflowers, those seed drop back into the soil, and those are the seed that allow for the next season's plants to sprout and grow again. So if you break that cycle, if you're mowing at the wrong time, you cut them down before those seeds can form, then you're going to break that cycle of them and they would come back very well. So that's really the only threat, is just not letting them do their thing and be natural.
How can we help to maintain and preserve wildflowers and bluebonnets?
Well, by like maintaining natural areas and make sure we have places for these things to continue to grow. And I think the state of Texas is very aware of that, because we've embraced our wildflower heritage here in a big way. I think so. There's a lot of awareness of that, and we've got a lot of roads, and they're very long, and you can be on them for a very long time. So there's a lot of opportunity to allow these wildflowers to look great. So instead of just having like grassy edges where we just mow it, mow it, mow it, which is expensive, being able to figure out how to manage those spaces so the wildflowers can flourish is a big thing, and it'll continue to have this beauty that we are all fond of.
And it's beautiful too, and it kind of leads to like a cultural thing as well, because usually people would say,
like, oh, pulling to the side of the road to take photos, or to pick at bluebonnets or flowers. I mean, how did that become so popular?
Well, I think just it's I think it started more with the bluebonnets to get that iconic springtime bluebonnet picture. I think every new arrival to Texas, the first spring, it's almost like a rite of passage. You better go get your bluebonnet photos. And even when you've been here a long time, my wife and I just did that. Let's see, I've been here in Texas now for 25 years, and we actually did our bluebonnet ride through the Ennis area and drove down from here to Dallas. And of course, we had to park, get out, and go take a selfie in the bluebonnets. So it's a thing for everybody to do. A lot of fun and great, like your kid's first bluebonnet picture. Dress them up and find a good patch out in the countryside, and then take a photo.
And is it bad to pick them, or is it a law? Do we know?
Yeah, shouldn't pick them, but yeah, and they're much more beautiful there, because when you if you try to pick them and to create a bouquet, I mean, like a couple of them in a vase, they're not that big. It's not that wow. But when there's hundreds of thousands blooming all across the distance, all of a sudden it's this beautiful, magical color that is pretty amazing. So they're better just to take photos and look at and not to try to pick.
I'm curious. So, why do some flowers have a pleasant scent, right? Or a pretty smell, and others do not?
The scent of flowers is basically a result of their evolution in terms of developing wherever their need to maybe repel an insect or an animal that might try to eat it. So it smells bad. Maybe like whatever the thing is out there that would normally munch on it just won't do that. Or the smell may be a more pleasant and maybe is a way to attract pollinators to pollinate. So these plants, they have these mechanisms in place. Why they smell the way they do and look the way they do is to attract beneficial, mainly insects that'll pollinate and help set those fruit for the next year to have the seeds. So that's how they develop.
And what are the characteristics of a bluebonnet?
Well, it's a lupin, which is actually that particular type lupin is in a bean family. It's actually a type of bean, and the seed pod of a bluebonnet looks like a little bean pod because they're in that same family. So the one of the things that all those plants in that group, leguminous family is what it's called, so a huge group of plants, even trees, is they have this unique ability to create nitrogen, which is essentially fertilizer. So as they grow, they actually enrich the soil, and that allows not only them to grow, but all the other plant species that are there to get nitrogen to grow and do better as well. So very beneficial. So legumes are really unique in that characteristic around the world.
I did not know that. I learned something new today.
It's called fixating nitrogen. That may be a little too far down the like technical trail there.
I'm Bree Flores at News Radio 1080, KRLD, and Dallas-Fort Worth. Thanks for joining me for Texas Wants to Know. If you like the show, please give us a rating and a review wherever you listen to podcasts. I wrote, produced, and edited this episode with editorial support from Chris Blake. Original music is by Michael Eisenstein. Odyssey's producer for National News Podcast is Myron Kaplan.